Welcome back to Owned and Operated, where we dive deep into the businesses we own, the businesses we are acquiring, and we also bring on guests to talk about their operating struggles. If you like what you hear today, follow Brandon and John on Twitter. That's John at Wilson Companies and Brandon at Brandon Nero. Also, check out our website where you can find all the other cool stuff we do. For example, we're launching a newsletter on ownedandoperated.com. That's ownedandoperated.com. Check it out. Okay, today's episode with Sam Leslie is insane. If you like stories about sacrifice and what it takes to build something that will change your family's life, you're gonna love this episode. If you like to hear an entrepreneur talk about their failures just as much as their successes, you're gonna love this episode. And if you're curious, Sam and John could be partnering on in the future, you're gonna love this episode. Enjoy.
If you listen to our show, you know that we can spend months sourcing businesses, talking with them, negotiating LOIs, conducting due diligence, all for a deal to fall through at the finish line. Microacquire solves that whole problem, whether you're buying or selling a business. As a seller, you're getting introduced to over 50,000 trusted buyers with total anonymity. As a buyer, you get to sort through profitable, vetted sellers and close in 30 days. We don't own any digital businesses yet, but over the next year, we're intending to grab a couple, and Microacquire is going to be our choice for a sourcing platform. Welcome back to Owned and Operated. Again, we just found out very recently that Apple Podcasts has reviews, so make sure to give us 5-star and check out our website, ownedandoperated.com. And if you like what you hear, you should follow me and Brandon on Twitter. It's at Wilson Companies and at Brandon Nyro. All right, so today we have Sam Leslie on. We're super excited about this. Sam and I have been interacting for about 6 months on Twitter. Most people have seen his various smart-ass comments or memes. That he's really been dropping some real quality memes recently, so we're super excited to have Sam on. Sam, how about you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Okay. Thanks for having me on, John Rand. So, and you can follow me at Sam T. Leslie as well on Twitter.
Yeah, it's a good follow,
guys. It's changed my life. So I am a longtime business owner, started a lawn landscape company when I was 12, like many, many people. Ran that for about 15 years and sold it in 2007. Bounced around a little while, traded options full-time, made a ton of money and lost a ton of money. And that
did
wasn't
for me. Did
you
make more or lose more?
I lost more.
All right.
Yeah. 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 But anyway, at that time, I was trying to support my family on that, and that didn't work so well. So went out and took a job that didn't pay the bills. It was a pest control job and realized that I was getting sick all the time. I was nauseated driving the truck. I was shaking. Little did I know that I was spraying chemicals that are neurotoxins, and it was getting on me. I wasn't applying it correctly, I guess. But anyway, I realized that that wasn't for me and that there was a better option out there, and that was natural and naturally derived pest control products. And so I researched it, borrowed $2,000 from my parents, and blew $1,000 on radio ads, and then took $1,000 and actually started the business by buying equipment, cards, and just hustling. So that business has been around for about 10 years. It's a hobby-sized business that my dad runs. It was a bridge from losing money in options to get into the military. So I've been an officer in the military, in the Army, for 10 years. I was a bomb tech for 8 years, and then I've been in government acquisitions for 2.5 years, managing large weapons contracts for the Army. I was in the Next Generation Squad Weapon program, which is the new weapon that's going to be replacing the M4 for the close combat soldier. So pretty cool programs, but realized that it was not building an asset that I could transfer my family. I have 7 children. And so it was just time to move on. And so I dropped my paperwork, applied to get out of the military, because as an officer, you basically have to apply to get out, and am leaving. I'm on leave right now, on vacation right now. I had a ton of it saved up, and my last day in the active duty military is in September. So along the way, I did deals. I've done web deals, did 4 acquisitions with a few partners, joint venture deals, which worked out really well. Cash flowed those for about 5 years and then exited in 2020. and then also helped building a high ticket course company that I exited in 2020 as well. So all that with partners, and then now I'm looking at acquisitions as a funded, you know, self-funded searcher and looking in the service space, which fits like a well-oiled glove.
Nice. Yeah. So man, that's a ton. There's a lot to go into there. I'm looking in Brandon's eyes, just like, which one do you want to do first?
I guess I'd really be curious to start with the hobby-based business first a little bit and kind of see just, I'm assuming that's kind of where the basis of all this came from, right? That's where you get your feet wet. So be a little interesting to see how that happened. What, you know, what was the process through it? How you got it started? Anything, any lessons learned off of that?
Sure. Absolutely. At 12 years old, I knew I wanted to own multiple businesses. I just didn't know how to do it. And I wanted to arm pumping
for the listener. I'm like arm pumping on Zoom.
yeah, for real. And I just didn't know how to do it. My dad's a pastor. My mom's a very intellectual person, but not a business owner. And so just didn't know how to get there. Like if I was to go back with some of the knowledge I have now, I'd be in a much different position. However, that's life. So ran that business, very small business. And then I started Organic Pest Solutions, which is in Greenville, South Carolina. If you go to the website, it's really one of those websites that people would like, oh, this would be a good acquisition because it looks like crap.
Nice.
We have a very long waiting list of people who want us to work on the properties, but we've just basically said we're not taking any more clients. So how I started that was I didn't know anything about marketing. If I'd known anything about marketing, I would have been on Google and probably would have grown it really quickly. But the only way I knew how to do it was radio and then trade shows or like natural shows, like where people make soaps and all that kind of stuff. So I didn't have banners. I didn't have any of that. I went out, I got shirts. I just took a couple dress shirts, got them embroidered for like $15 with my logo. A buddy of mine made the logo, still use it to this day. And went out to these trade shows and took my card. So I took a card and made a really nice card. It was real glossy, had my picture on it, Organic Pest Solutions. It was yellow. On the back side, it had my pricing per square foot. So for a house, you know, 2,000 square feet, you're going to pay $79 a quarter, blah, 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 blah. You know, new start, it's going to cost this. So basically gave everything I was going to do on the back of the card. So I took a folding table and set it up. And then I took every single one of my cards and I laid them out on top of the table end to end, side to side. And so it just caught people's eyes. Like, what? I've never seen anybody do that. It looks stupid. But I didn't have a banner. I didn't have anything. It was just my personality and shaking hands. People walking by like, hey, are you interested in Organic Pest Solutions or natural or naturally derived pest control? And my products were great. So anyway, people would pick up the cards and they would call. And the radio advertising, believe it or not, spent $1,000 on a start package for a talk radio station. I figured the demographic was, you know, would be able to afford it. However, little did I know that baby boomers don't really care about natural pest control. So that's who's listening to talk radio. So I blew $1,000 and I got one lead. And that one lead didn't even stay with me. So I got $80 out of a $1,000 investment, and you can see my teeth. This is an interesting part of this. So I'm missing two teeth in the top of my mouth, the top of my jaw, and it's because I was born without them. My parents had saved money to get me implants. I never got them. And so when I went back to my parents, I said, can I have the money that you saved for implants? And they said, of course. And so instead of getting teeth, I started Organic Pest Solutions, which paid me, got my family through, you know, to where I could enter the army, paid my sister and brother-in-law during tough times when they ran the business for me while I was in the army, and then is now paying my dad and making sure that he qualified for Social Security, because as a pastor, you can opt out of Social Security. He opted out 45 years ago, and then he's using this to get his eligibility back. So these businesses, y'all, are just a lot more than cash flowing things. They change people's lives. And so not to mention the customers whose children who have allergies, and this is the only service that doesn't trigger their allergies and all that kind of stuff. So that's where I got started. It basically pays for some, you know, cell phone and some essentials, just some fun stuff, and then pays my dad. I don't want to move back down to Greenville, South Carolina. If I did, I would blow that business up, but it's something that I can take and move into another state if I wanted to. But one more interesting thing about this business. So if you think, and I know this is not a startup, I know this is not a startup show.
No, I mean, we've talked a bunch about startups, so this is fair game.
But okay, okay. But I didn't want to just, you know, okay, whatever. I did not have any background in pest control. So I didn't even have a sprayer's license when I was in landscape. I didn't apply for it. I didn't do it. I didn't know how to do it. So I had no background. Well, I looked at the regulations in South Carolina and I said, okay, I need 3 years of experience or what, 2 years of experience before I can apply to be an applicator. And so this is just a lesson in not taking no for an answer. I knew I needed to start this company. I had to quit the other company because I was getting sick every day. And so I called up the regulators in South Carolina and I said, hey, I've got a college degree, biology courses, zoology courses. I understand what I'm doing. I know the effects. I know the dangers, all that kind of stuff. Can I study, take the test, and then you can take my college degree and my classes as credit toward my experience? And they said yes.
Oh, that's awesome.
And so I was able to, and the pest control test, I mean, for some people it'd probably be easy. For me, it was not real easy. I wasn't doing termite stuff, but the termite stuff was the hardest. But I passed. They took my classwork and I got my applicator's license. And so was able to just hustle my way through. So what I would do is I would take that card and I would punch a hole in it, because I didn't have a flyer and I didn't have money for a flyer. Man, I forgot all about this. This is 10 years ago. And I would take rubber bands. I just got a big bag of rubber bands and I would like half hitch knot them through the card. And then I would walk door to door in these neighborhoods where you couldn't solicit. And I would just put it on their door handle. And it was a yellow card that would stand out. And I'd do hundreds of houses and just put it on their door handle, door handle, door handle, door handle, and was able to hustle. And I had three kids at the time, a mortgage, and was freaking out. So, and had no knowledge of marketing. I wish I had been on Twitter at the time and listened to some people. At the time, I was I knew everything. Was scared to ask anybody anything because I'd look like I wasn't a professional. Everything has 100% turned the other way, 180 degrees now. I don't know anything. Please teach me. So I've got a lot of experience in the service business and making things work and never taking no from an answer, and also never take no from somebody who can't tell you yes. So that's where I come from, scrappy. And where I'm at now is because the Army really allowed me to save, invest in myself, and that's where we are now.
Yeah, man, that's awesome. My biggest takeaway from a lot of that was, yeah, the hustle, but the sacrifice that went into it to create something. So I think about that a lot because I'm sure I've talked about this on this show. But so we started buying companies 4 years ago. I take the same salary that I took 4 years ago when the company was 120% of its current size. And by the end of the year, you know, it'll be 10% of its current size, because the sacrifice, the hustle, all that stuff to build something greater than yourself, which it sounds like you did. And I think that's awesome. It's just, don't get into it thinking it's easy, but I do think that the hustle and the sacrifice turns into something great, which it sounds like you have something great. And you were able to help a lot of people in addition to yourself.
Yeah. And I think listening to the podcast like this, I didn't discover podcasts until like 2014. This was 2009. And so just the resources that are out there now, I'm pumped for people coming up, because it can happen. You can make it happen. And the sacrifices, yes, they're there, but it seems like there's so many resources now, especially people on Twitter, small business Twitter, shout out, who are just willing to give, 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 and they've done it. So listen up and read Twitter.
Yeah. All right. So post pest control. So your plan for pest control is your dad's going to run it for forever?
Until he's ready. I've had some companies reach out to acquire it. It wouldn't be a big exit. It would just get it off my plate. But I can take all those things that I've learned and move them into another state if I wanted to start another company. But if I wanted to put some money into marketing and hire somebody down there, my dad could probably manage it. It just hasn't been a focus. Mm-hmm.
So in pest control, I would have to imagine that pest control metrics are pretty similar to really any other truck-based company. So like we expect minimum, like when we go into deals, we look for minimum 20,000 in sales per month per truck, X amount of gross profit, depends on the trade. Like HVAC is the lowest at 50%. Electric's the highest at 70. Yeah. What else do we look for?
You're looking at more around electric.
Okay. Well, that's great.
Just because the cost of supplies is very low. The time at a property, if you're just doing your maintenance, my dad can spend 10 minutes at a property, 10 or 15 minutes doing an exterior application.
Is that if once a month?
Once a quarter. And then we give, I believe it's three free service calls if there's something that needs to be updated. But usually we hit the house really hard at the first start. So we'll spend an hour and a half at a first start where we'll take off all the electrical plates, dust the walls, you know, spray interior, put bait inside, all that kind of gel bait, all that kind of stuff. But the cost of materials is just super low. Yeah. And the time he can do about 6 hours a day, he can do about $1,200 in production. And that's without me raising the prices in 9 years.
Yeah, that's pretty good. So are you guys currently, you know, the focus of the show is operations. Like the startup is great. Let's talk a little bit about operating it. So
sure.
Are you guys tracking metrics of revenue per truck? And you don't have to share anything you don't want to, but I'm just curious. And then how long did it take from, so this is two questions. So are we tracking metrics and KPIs or are we not? And then what are they? And then how long did it take to go from startup to sort of a stabilized, this thing's running now?
So we're not tracking. It's just not big enough. And the not looking at really any growth. I mean, he may add one or two customers a month, maybe. Okay,
sure.
He's keeping it the size he wants to keep it. It could grow a lot more. But if we were to grow, I would be tracking KPIs. I'd be on Service Titan. I'd be, you know, we'd be doing all that. And then how long did it take to be a sustainable? I would say we probably were there within 3 to 6 months. Just one operator, me, able to pay myself. I was there within 3 to 6 months. That's so
interesting. And one truck right now, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And actually with pest control, you don't even need a truck. You can do it in a car if you have the appropriate separation for the chemicals and all that kind of stuff. So your vehicle can be a lot more gas efficient as well. Just depends on kind of where you are.
Yeah. What does pest control look like at scale? Like what is scale in pest control? Is that 5? Is that 100 employees?
I think you'd have to define scale and revenue for me. What's in your mind?
It's just like, what's the highest that a company can get naturally? Like landscaping, it seems like scale is 1.5 to 2 million. And if you're breaking past that barrier, you've got some supernatural tendencies.
So I think now I'm not at that level, but I would say that scale is probably, I'd say 2 to 3 million, where you've got solid managers and processes and tracking all the KPIs and everything. That's what you're looking at. Yeah.
All right. And then, yeah, like what does customer acquisition look like for pest control?
For my company, we would be targeting using Google AdWords and then also, direct search, and then also social media gives us a really good, we're really able to target well because of our niche. We don't use any synthetics, so it's natural and naturally derived. So it's pretty easy to go in and geo-target high net worth neighborhoods who are going to be more focused on the natural stuff. And then we can go and we can target Whole Foods and say, anybody who's been in this location in the last 7 days, hit them up. And then as you can take that, I don't know if you know anything about the targeting on Facebook, but you can geo-target a location out, and the closest is a mile from one location. You can actually take an exclusion zone. You can do like 5 or 6 exclusion zones, and you can exclude the areas in the mile radius so that you get down just to that block that the Whole Foods is at. So you can super target. So it's very easy for us, because of our niche and who likes to buy our stuff, for us to be able to target them. So targeting stuff like natural pest control, Greenville, South Carolina, organic pest control, you know, those keywords are going to be just fire. So a lot of our competitors have moved into natural pest control. However, they started out as synthetic and they've moved into natural, or they have both, and you've got the option. And usually what happens is those applicators, those sprayers or applicators, don't know really how to use the natural stuff effectively. They spray and apply natural like they would a synthetic. And that's not always the best way to do it to get the most effect. So I think we have a better selling proposition. We also are very niche, and we are pure. You know, they would call it, we're natural pure. So we appeal to the people who are like, yeah, we're all about natural. So, I mean, we are too, but it helps with marketing.
Yeah. What does conversion look like? So, you know, you target people who are looking for natural and organic, but is there a conversion process for people who use synthetic and then you're trying to get them to convert to organic and natural?
Usually when we get phone calls or emails, it's people who are already convinced. So I'm not out there trying to convince anybody. We've already got a mailing list of people who are just like, please, please, please come apply this at our house. And I say, we're not taking any more customers. I'm sorry. So people are already believers. And a lot of them are people who have allergies and who, when the synthetic pest control applicators come through and they spray in their house, they have allergic reactions. And so they are immediately looking for something that is an alternative. So the conversion is like, it's basically, when can you come and apply at my house?
I would think kids too. Like I'm listening to this, and we've never done any type of lawn chemicals or pest. Like we haven't done anything because I have 2 kids, like under 3. So like there's zero way I'm putting a chemical anywhere. So if I did, like it would have to be. It would just be whoever has the organic thing is going to be the one coming out. I get that.
Exactly. And you know, people tout themselves as being organic or natural. And some of those chemicals, if applied incorrectly, can be as bad as synthetics. They just don't last as long. So you have to be very careful and listen to your client. You know, do they not want anything inside the house? Okay, well, you've got a different technique to, if they've got insects inside, to bait them outside, to bring them outside and get rid of them out there. So there's a lot of different like ways that you can do pest control. And that's also like door sweeps and sealing up the house. Like we would do sealing as well. So we go into, if there are plumbing voids, we could seal those if the insects were coming in, or, you know, there's all different kinds of ways that you can control for pests. But on the operation side, if you're operating at scale, you definitely, it's like any other truck-based business, you need a place to store the vehicles unless you dispatch them from the people's houses, their applicators' houses, but they're going to have to store the chemicals in the appropriate way. So most of the time they have to come into the shop because they have to be stored appropriately according to state regulations. Your salespeople are probably working out of an office, and then your managers are working out of the same office. Just it's the hub. So you're going to need some kind of commercial space and a lease.
Sweet. All right.
But
I don't know that I have any more questions on pest control. That was interesting.
You're getting me excited about pest control again.
Yeah. Honestly, I'm kind of excited about pest control. I'm like, damn, let's do this. Plumbing and pest control are us, right? Let's do this.
So there's a guy, I can't remember his name. I'll have to look it up and send it to you, but he has built 3 different pest control companies and has exited to Terminix every single time. And he understands what Terminix is looking for. And since they're rolling up the industry, he goes in and builds massive businesses and then exits to Terminix because he knows what they want and he builds what they want. It's really cool. I think he's done, maybe it was 2 exits. So he's in the midst of building his 3rd. his first exit was 70 million. And I think his next exit was 140.
That's huge.
To Turnix.
Yeah.
And so he's already got like a pipeline mm-hmm. and hey, I've already exited to you guys before. I built the culture that you want. You know what you're going to get. So just buy me out.
Oh my gosh. That's funny. I've heard of other people doing that. I know a guy, he sold his company. It was in medical devices a couple, like 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And he talked about that because he was working on his second company and it got bought out by a Fortune 500. I don't know which one.
Oh.
So he started another one basically with the exact same funnel in mind. Like, well, I get the game now. So let's do it again. Let's go for it. And I was like, all right.
Sure. Exactly. Exactly. And I think it's the same thing with plumbing, HVAC, electrical. If you got an acquirer who's just hungry for deals and you know what they want, you can build what they want and sell it to them.
Just
hit the gas pedal and then sell it to them.
Yeah. I think the whole exit thing is something we don't talk about really on the show at all, mainly because I don't plan to exit. my exit will be my grave. I don't, you know, somebody else's problem, what happens to the companies after that. Oh, man. All right. So then you got into a bunch of online stuff.
Yeah. So I got involved with a guy named Ace Chapman, who does a lot of private equity, small deals, and kind of learned from him. I was like, I found him on a podcast and I joined his program and got into four deals within 9 months. So that was pretty cool. One was a SaaS business. One was a platform as a service where you would sign up as a seller and give a percentage of your sales to the platform. And then there was a solo ads marketplace. And solo ads, if you don't know what that is individual ads on email lists. So, hey, I've got an email list. You want to sell to my email list and I will sell you that placement in my email newsletter. So maybe in your non-existent newsletter, you can sell placements. So it's a solo ad marketplace. And then the other one was an animation studio where we would do those whiteboard explainer videos and things like that for B2B stuff. So we cash flowed those. Two of those were joint ventures with six entities involved, individuals and entities involved. We pooled our resources to buy the asset and then cash flowed it.
How big were they?
So under $250,000. And all of them were under $250,000, but they were all bought at about a 2.5 to 3 multiple. I think one of them was a 2 multiple. But learned a ton on those because the JV partners wanted to pull all of the cash out every quarter. Because of the operating agreement that I had in place, because I was ignorant, I was not keeping any of the capital in the company to continue growth. So unless there were constant conversions and unless there was constant profit, the business was going to die. So we had to make some adjustments along the way, and a couple of them did die, but we cash flowed them for about 5 years until competitors took over the market. But I learned a ton through those acquisitions on how to set up deals, how to do joint ventures, and that kind of led me to where I am now with the joint venture list.
Well, before we get to the joint venture list, I want to dive into lessons learned.
Sure.
So you guys did four deals. You said $250,000 or under a quarter. Was that purchase price or cash flow?
Purchase price.
Okay.
Purchase price.
So these are four small deals, $1 million total.
Yep. Right?
Okay. Producing about $500,000 or a little bit under from sort mm-hmm. of multiple you said. Okay. Why were so many people involved?
They had less capital. They just didn't have a whole lot of capital. They wanted to be kind of silent JV partners. And I was operating one of the businesses. And then we had three other operators that were getting. So how we had it set up was basically that every quarter there'd be distributions to all of the investors. So the operators were also investors.
So that's how you got past accredited? Because I assume that not everyone was accredited.
Correct. Some were, some weren't. But that's a joint venture is, you know, it's not a raise. It's a pooling of capital of entities and then you buy an asset. So that's where we're getting around accredited. Getting around accredited was not necessarily the goal. It was just how we set up the deals. And anyway, it's a great way for people with less cash and less capital to get into some of these deals. But the operators were also co-investors, some at the like 10% level, some at the 50% level.
So everyone was a part of, if you were an operator in one company, you still got profits from all four or five of these deals.
So how we set it up was each one of the deals had its own entity. So we set up a separate entity for each deal. And then everybody who is a part of that deal had the distribution based on their equity percentage.
So someone might have 2% of this deal, 10% of another. So it's not like you had a holding company and everyone had X percentage of the holding company. You had different allocations per deal.
Correct. And there were different individuals per deal. So
we had six
in one deal. We had three in the other. Okay. And there were different individuals. So it was a lot to learn.
Yeah, there's a lot going on there. Yeah.
So each one of these deals had its own LLC. The operator would set up that LLC, and then the entities that pooled their capital with the operator would be a part according to their contribution. So if you're going to buy $1 million asset or $250,000 asset, and you were going to have 50% of the deal, you would contribute $125,000. And then as the operator operated that business, you as a silent JV partner or strategic or whatever, you could be as involved as you wanted to, you would give 20% of your profits to the operator. So the operator would get their percentage, you know, 10%, 50%, whatever, plus 20% of yours to pay for the operation. And then when you're ready to shut it down, you just shut it down or you sell the asset and dissolve the entity. But the key was that there really weren't any individuals in these deals. It was their own LLCs or their entities were the ones that were, some of them were C corps or S corps were part of these deals. It wasn't individuals.
Okay. All right. So you bought these smaller deals. You operated a couple of them. I mean, you described four or five different business models.
Mm-hmm. It was crazy.
This is like really complicated for these small deals. I'm like, holy shit.
And I'm working full time with seven kids.
Yeah, yeah. So operating these, I mean, it's $100,000 to, you know, something cash flow website. So like how much did that take time-wise to operate and do?
Very little.
Which one did you operate?
I operated the SaaS business. It was a keyword identifier for Google advertising. So basically, it would tell you which keywords were most valuable, how hard they were to rank for, all that kind of stuff. So if you know Neil Patel, he's really big on SEO. This is an SEO SaaS tool. And Neil Patel kind of put us out of business with Ubersuggest. He bought Ubersuggest and just started piling money into it and growing it. And so competing with the likes of SEMrush, Ubersuggest, and all those others, it was tough to continue to compete. But that's what I ran, and ran it for about 4.5 years. And I never figured out the paid acquisition for that business. So paid customer acquisition. It was all organic. So when we bought the business, it had a lot of great blog posts that were ranked really well. And it had a lot of entries on, you know, best free SaaS tools from different websites. It would get great backlinks. And so we had a ton of people signing up for free. And then we would have a small conversion to paid. So think 1-2% of free users would convert to paid. So I messed with pricing, all that kind of stuff, was able to increase revenue for the first year. And then Ubersuggest and SEMrush just started really hardcore paid advertising. And at that point, I wasn't very versed in social media and Google advertising. So we paid a little bit of the price for that. But anyway, it took about, I'd say less than 5 hours a week to operate the business.
So you bought a business, and this is always the thing with online businesses to me, is that can happen where like you almost sort of have to plan on it. I was reading something from Andrew Wilkinson, and he said, if they buy a business and it makes it to 10 years, then they hit the lottery or something like that. Because like crazy that, you know, versus, you know, I'm buying multiple home service companies right now that are 30 years to 80 years old.
Yes. But the return for the amount of time spent on these smaller deals is really high. I would say 5 years is a long time to have a business. We cash flowed them for too long. We did.
Like you should have sold it?
Yes. Oh, yes. Got it. And I had multiple opportunities to sell. And that's a huge lesson that I learned was basically when somebody wants to buy it at a reasonable amount, unless you're willing to stick with that forever, like you are, you know, permanent hold, then you should probably sell it. When somebody's ready to buy it at a reasonable price and you've been cash flowing it for a while, sell it if it's an online business.
Yeah. That's interesting.
Because there's no moat, man. There's, unless you've got crazy awesome tech, there's no moat around that business. The only thing is being able to efficiently acquire customers and keeping them for a long time. Their lifetime value's got to be super high if you're going to spend a lot of money in the market to acquire them. So, and like a home service business, like my pest control business, man, the lifetime value on one of those customers, I calculated it the other day. I believe it was like $6,000 was the lifetime value, because the average customer pays about $350 a year or $400 a year. And so they'd stay with me for, you know, 5, 6, 7 years. Like I've got people who are with me, have been with me for 10 years and just won't let go. So I would much rather just dump money into the pest control company than into something that doesn't have a moat.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's interesting. So did you guys exit any of those deals?
So I exited one to my partner, and I let him. So what we did was he owned part of my SaaS deal and I owned part of his solo market or solo ads deal. And so we basically just traded equity and we just said, hey, you take my equity, I'll take your equity. I made a lot out a lot better and cash flowed a lot better than he did. But eventually it's called keywordeye.com. Eventually my client base just kind of died off. And so basically I redirect it to an affiliate link now. And I've got one guy on Twitter who's trying to buy it from me. So nice. I should probably sell it.
Yeah, take your own advice, man.
Take my own advice. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, we've talked to James Camp, we talked to Kelsey, and the digital space is just so fascinating to me. Is it fascinating to you, Brandon?
It's weird to see it from a service-based side. That's like nothing that applies here actually applies over there. It's like you said, we're 53 years.
Yeah.
And that is...
And we can invest so much money into brand and moat and all this stuff because in service-based companies, moat already exists because of physical location.
Exactly.
And then moat starts to exist because of how many reviews do you have? And then how well do people know your name? And it's all these different things that smash together into you've got a really defensible asset that will cash flow for decades. And that it's just such a, like, I really struggle with the online thing.
It's interesting, you know, like, it seems like you're the pesticide, right? You're operating in an extremely targeted, probably, 30-mile radius, right, of customers. Whereas every time we talk to anybody who's operating online, it's national, it's international, you're targeting every single person that touches the internet. It's a completely different concept of operation.
Yeah, and I love online businesses because of the amount of time versus the output. But as far as something that is going to stick around for a long time that I can transfer to my children, that my children can learn the trade, that will never, ever go away, service businesses are the best, you know, investment. So I feel like it's like a long-term, almost like a long-term real estate play when you're buying a service company that has a great brand. And honestly, I want to get into one of the best opportunities that I think I see for young operators that want to get into acquisitions of service companies.
Well, let's talk about that because we were just about to talk about that before we dove back into the website. So dive in.
Okay.
It's cool. Your current project, right? Let's get it.
Well, yeah, this is kind of an offshoot of that. So one, I just got off the phone with a broker for a brokered plumbing and HVAC deal in Colorado.
I know, man.
I'm pumped because we're relocating to Colorado in six weeks. I'm like, great, let's buy a house, let's buy a business, let's get all 7 kids in school, let my brain explode. so anyway, one of the best opportunities I see right now, and I just talked to somebody yesterday from Twitter. He was like, hey, you know, how can I get into this? I don't really have the capital. I want to do what you're doing. I want to do what John's doing. I want to do it. You know, service business is awesome. And I was like, okay, so here's what I think. And it's a hybrid of what I did with an online company called We Sell Your Site. And it was an online business brokerage. And it's my pinned tweet. And it talks about how I optioned a business. I bought an option to buy the business and run the business and did a profit split with the owners. So I paid $30,000 to run the business for 12 months because this business had been just kind of sitting, collecting leads. It was an online business brokerage with a lot of history. And they said, okay, we'll give you an option to buy this business at $575,000. Now, this thing had not made a cent in 3 years. And I said, I will pay $30,000 to get those leads and run the business as you. And they said, okay. So I gave them $30,000. I started tracking those leads, you know, tracking those leads down, calling those leads. And I listed like 2 to 3 businesses. One of the businesses that I listed came from somebody who's looking to buy an online company. And it was a superhero e-commerce site. And this e-commerce site had been, I'm getting off the subject, but it had been losing $400,000 a year for 2 years. It had been doing 10 to 15 million in revenue right when the Avengers movies came out, it blew up. They were doing superhero stuff. And then everybody got into the market. So this is where it starts to kill your moat, right? So he was living off of the profits that he had generated 2 to 3 years earlier, still had $750,000 worth of inventory, custom SaaS that he had built to run everything, warehouse, all this kind of stuff. Wanted to sell it for, I think it was 1.5. And I was like, you've been losing $400,000 a year, man. And he didn't want me to list it publicly. And so I spent 3 to 4 months calling strategic acquirers, and I found one who wanted the business. And it took 10 months to close that business. And it was back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Deal fell off the table 2 to 3 times. And anyway, so, and this guy was buying, it was just a real bulldog. And this guy is selling it. It's just like, oh, the glory days. and he's like, it's worth way more. No, it's not. Anyway, we get down to close day. It sells for 1.325 with like $650,000 worth of goodwill and $750,000 of inventory, whatever that adds up to. Huge logistics operation to shift all this stuff down to Florida, blah, 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 blah. I get paid $110,000 for my brokering. It took me 10 months. It was a lot of stress, mental stress, but not a lot of actual work. It took like probably 20 to 30 hours to actually broker that deal. And then I did the 70-30 split with the owners of the website. And then after that deal, I flipped the option to buy the site to another buyer. And so I bought the option for $30,000. I made about $70,000 on that one deal. And then I had another couple that closed that I made around $4,000 to $5,000, $10,000 around there. And then I sold the option for $25,000. So a total investment of $5,000 and I walked away with probably $80,000. So it was pretty cool. It's pretty fun. It's good experience. But what I'm saying and all that to say is that there are a ton of baby boomers who are shutting their businesses down, don't even realize about how to sell it. They don't want to sell it. They're just like, it's like me selling Keyword Eye. It's just a lot of work. Maybe I'm just going to shut it down. And they're looking for people with low capital, no capital to come in and take the reins from them and the responsibility from their shoulders and would be interested in me, you, somebody else coming in to be a CEO or taking over their responsibilities, doing a profit split with an option to buy the business that would mature after 6 months on the job. So like you come work for me for 6 months, you take my responsibilities, you learn this thing inside and out. And I give you at the end of 6 months, I give you an option to buy at a certain multiple based on revenue or based on profit over the next 3 years. You've got the option to buy at this multiple at any time. And so the SBA would look very kindly on that. Because one, you've been running the business, right? You know it inside and out. You learned from the owner. You've been getting a profit split and probably a small salary. So you got to eat glass for a little while and just grind for a little while. But at the end, you've got the opportunity to buy an amazing business from a baby boomer. And along the way, you've been able to streamline operations because you've been learning from Twitter. And so you've turned it into this great business. They exit at a higher purchase price based on the multiple. You're happy, they're happy, and they move on. So I think that's one of the best opportunities right now for people with no capital or low capital to go out and find an opportunity, just start beating on those doors, those plumbing, HVAC companies, electrical companies, pest control companies, lawn companies, whatever. So that's the best opportunity I see right now.
Yeah, that's awesome. And how does that pair with your, because I feel like that's a good segue into the operator placement, because aren't you, I mean, you're doing this. So if somebody is like, hell yeah, Sam, like, yeah, let's do that. How do I find the deal? How do I do the thing? Isn't that the next stage of what you started working on? Or do you not want to talk about that?
Oh, yeah, I want to talk about it, man.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Let's talk about it.
So basically, everybody, I put a tweet out the other day that said, if I had a good operator, if we had a good business, if we had, I think it was great. If we have a great operator, great business, and great terms, would you be interested in participating?
It's like the softest of softball questions. It's like, hey, if you're hungry, do you want some food?
Exactly. And I was really, I honestly was gauging just interest. And I figured there was interest out there, but I just didn't know how much. And just, it started blowing up. And I was like, oh man, I think I might have something here. But of course, you know, you guys know, the hardest part of doing deals is finding a great operator and a great deal. So the money and the capital's always there for a great deal and a good operator. So I had Mike Botkin reach out to me, and we had been talking about a deal that he was working on, a landscape company down in his area, that if he acquired it, it would turn it into B&B plus this company would turn him into the largest like residential and commercial landscape company in the area, which is awesome. And I was like, man, that's great, dude. This sounds awesome. It's cash flowing amazingly, or it looks like it's cash flowing amazingly. So would you let me send your deal out to my list before you go Twitter public with it? And at that time, my list was
he like, raises off of Twitter. Like he raised the first one, yeah, like with a tweet, right? Like, hey, I need
he did.
Money. Yeah.
Okay. He did. So he was going to do the same thing, but it was basically, he was looking at raising or just JVing for pooling capital between B&B and other entities, whoever wanted to join, to get the down payment for an SBA loan. And so I was like, look, man, you know, I've got 70 to 80 people on my list right now, and it's been like 4 days. So you might want to, you know, think about maybe raising the whole thing. Who knows? And he goes, oh, holy crap. You know, maybe I could raise the whole thing. So anyway, now we're up to over 200 people on the list in a week. And we just released the deal yesterday, joint venture opportunity. And he had, I think he's had 4 or 5 people, very, very serious people, reach out. So
that's awesome.
It's been amazing. I also put a tweet in the trends.com group on Facebook, which has about 9,000 people, and it blew up over there. And I got a lot of subscribers over there. There's another guy who's looking to raise around $3 million or do a $3 million joint venture. So that's kind of where we're at. So I'm looking for the operators who have the deals, who have the background and have the deals, and then they would come to me to just put it out to my joint venture list to see who'd want to do a joint venture. And I'm trying to be very careful around protecting them, protecting myself, and protecting the people on the list. So lots of disclaimers, as much information as possible, but then everything kind of gets hammered out with the operator. I'm really not involved in the deals. I'm just kind of the list owner.
I mean, that's sweet. And I think we talked about this on the phone the other day, and I thought that it was kind of interesting. So we're going to be dealing with the gap, as it's called, when you run out of SBA bandwidth and you want to, you know, keep doing the thing. So we're starting to examine what our funding sources are, and they're not attractive. Like Mez, I had like 20%, or equity, you know, at unlimited. Neither of which is attractive. Or, I mean, the other is just slow down and do it with cash, which is sort of what I'm starting to lean towards. But being able to I wonder if there's a way to do it debt less than Mez, but higher than SBA, sort of that middle ground of debt, like 8 to 10% or something like that, where people are still satisfied with it. But there is a big demand out there right now for that middle ground of lending that folks like myself, operators who are not ready, like I'm not going to go raise an equity round because why would I? But I'll go raise a debt round.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's people out there who are interested in doing private debt placement. And I've got one guy who reached out to me and was like, hey, man, I do private debt placement for high net worth individuals and family offices. So I'm interested in what you're doing. And I was just, it was just incredible the amount of, you know, DMs and phone calls I was getting from people who are like, hey, I'm really legit. Like, of course, you got to check them out. But they had very, very good backgrounds. They spoke the language. They knew what to say. So either they're really, really good con men or they're actually legit. That's on me to figure it out. But there's tons of appetite for that. And like 8 to 10%, 12%, like that's a great return. That's a great return, especially when some of these family offices and high net worth individuals have, you know, have just tons of money just sitting there. I just have to be very careful around like just the SEC and all the regulations and the laws. I just want to protect everybody involved and then everybody can get into business and grow their businesses. So,
yeah, that's awesome. Well, that's a great plug for the list. I guess closing down, do you have any sort of final thoughts you want to, any final nuggets of wisdom you want to give to us?
Oh man, it's already time. Wow. This has been great. Let's see. I'm looking at my list right here.
Nice.
So, no, I really don't have anything else. I really just want to emphasize that if anybody's listening who doesn't have any capital or low capital, go out there, knock on the doors, build relationships, and get creative with these owners. And you may just find somebody who wants you to take it off their hands because their kids don't want to do it. And they know that it's really not sellable at this time because maybe the books are just messed up and, but it cash flows well. And maybe, you know, it's just not attractive. You can make it attractive. You can grow that business and you can buy that business. And they may even give it to you with sweat equity. Who knows? So I just want to encourage those out there who are listening to get really creative with deal making, because what is somebody going to say? No. Okay.
Well, and I know guys that did this too. Like I know a guy who bought a florist shop like this. And then a deal came across my desk about 6 months ago that was a $30,000 HVAC company. This company did $200,000 a year in sales. It was just the owner. And they just wanted to sell it as like a liquidation for $30,000. And hell yeah. Like for sure. Like, well, I tried to get it.
Yeah.
I mean, there's stuff like that all the time. Yeah. And as far as experience, this is just kind of funny too. I had someone cold DM me the other day. He's probably going to hear this because he says he listens to the pod, so this will be funny. Cool. But he cold DM me the other day and he said, hey man, I'm interested in what you're doing. I want to buy my own thing. I don't understand anything about how to do this. Can I come shadow you for a week or a month or a quarter or whatever? And he doesn't really expect anything. He just wants to be in the room. And it sounded interesting. And I was like, yeah, sure. Let's do this. So he's coming out in July, I think. And I think that, like, so just, I would say if you are interested and you just have no idea where to start, one, listening to the show is probably a good start. But reaching out to someone, even if it's not an equity, and just trying to understand what it looks like. Because most people are like, yeah, I want to buy a plumbing company, but they have no idea what that looks like.
Yeah, your first site visit, you're like, holy shit, I don't want to buy a plumbing company.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, exactly. So whenever somebody reaches out, like, you know, Rand's here now. He came off Twitter. We have a bunch of people who we've interacted with, and it's interesting. But I recommend just reaching out because, he's going to come out with his wife in July, and it should be kind of fun. He gets to see how truck companies work. And,
hey, that's amazing, man. I mean, that is we'll education. That education is worth so much money. I mean, it's ridiculous how much money that education's worth. So
I should start charging for.
You should probably charge him $100,000. you should probably charge him $100,000.
All right, yeah. Sorry, man. You're going to hear this later. I'm really sorry. Sam told me to charge you.
Oh, guys, this has been amazing. Thank you.
Well, thanks for coming on, Sam. This was awesome. I definitely recommend everybody follow Sam on Twitter. It's at Sam T. Leslie. He's constantly dropping bombs and fire memes. Thanks for joining us.
Rand, thanks, man. I love what you're doing with John too. It's been great to watch what you guys are doing together, and I'm super impressed.
Awesome.
Yeah. Thanks, Sam.
Thanks, guys.